Conversations with Authors podcast. I'm your host, Alison Thompson, aka The Proof Fairy. This podcast is a fabulous opportunity for me to have a chat with a published author about what inspires them to write, how they go about the writing and publishing process, and what effect writing a book has had on their life. And I also find out what tips they have for other aspiring authors. My guest on the show today is Paul Newton, a magician, mind reader, hypnotist, and the author of Mental Theft. Paul started out providing entertainment at weddings and corporate events, but now he uses his skills to help people and companies defeat scammers. This interview was a lot of fun to do, and I really hope you enjoy listening to it as much as I enjoyed recording it. Hi, Paul. It's really lovely to see you today. Thank you for coming onto the podcast.
Oh, that's quite all right. Seriously, once you told me what it was about, I had a quick look and bit of a listen. Did have a cheeky listen to one when I was in the car the other day.
Good stuff.
But yeah, when you explained about it, I thought, yeah, that's perfect. I'll happily come on and see if we can help some people.
Yeah. So tell me what your book is.
The book's called Mental Theft. I'm ridiculously proud of it. You know, it's all about how a magician and a mind reader breaks company's security. And I use mind reading techniques and I use social engineering skills and I cheat and I lie and I break into companies and make their security fall over. Normally, they don't even notice I'm in there.
Wow, that sounds awesome. That sounds like a really fun thing to do as well.
It's fun. It's scary. You get the little hairs on the back of your neck go absolutely ballistic when something's working, but you might get caught. And also, you have all of that excitement and you're doing something that's kind of naughty, but you're doing it legally, so nobody can tell you off. It's awesome. It's great fun.
Best position to be in, I reckon. Yeah. Something with all the risk and all the fun and all the risk of doing something naughty, but without any of the consequences.
Yeah. But with this funny letter in my back pocket saying I'm allowed to do this, please don't arrest me. That's my favorite part.
That sounds really cool. Yeah. So what inspired you to write the book?
Do you know what? Right. It was about see, I tell this story and every time I say it was about a year and a half ago. That's a lie. It was longer than that now. A year and a half ago, we were in lockdown. It wasn't it. So we're now coming up to possibly 3 years ago.
Okay.
I was a magician doing a gig for the military. I can't say where the base was, but I was going around doing magic tricks. And I went to this table. There was three guys, three girls, and I was doing some magic, doing some stereotypical close-up magic. And while I was there, one of the guys was really annoying. He was one of the worst kind of hecklers because he was just rude with it. And he was like, magic's not real. And this is rubbish. And this is. And I thought, right, I'm going to have you. And I did some mind reading. So I stole his PIN number for his credit card, his username and his password for his computer, his mother's maiden name, his first pet's name, and the name of the road he grew up on.
What? Wow. Yeah.
Now he then was quite scared. I walked away from that table. I got about 20 meters away. He came chasing up behind me and he said, look, I need to talk to you. And he said, is mind reading real? Now, in this situation, if a child comes up to me and says, is Santa real? The answer is always yes.
Yeah.
Is the Tooth Fairy real? Yes. Okay.
Of course. Yeah.
But this one, I've now got somebody from the military who's quite a high up officer saying to me, is this magic stuff real? So I thought, right, I'm going to mess with you a bit more. So I said to him, okay, I'll ask you three questions and you have to be honest. And he said, okay. I said, number one, could I have brought a stooge in with me to this base? And he went, no, your car's been checked, your passport's been checked. You only get in here if you pass all the security checks. Brilliant. So no stooge. Question two, would the people at your table have given me that information? And he went, no, I trust them with my life on a daily basis. They wouldn't have helped. Brilliant. Okay. Question number three. If you've answered honestly to those first two questions, how can mind reading not be real? He then swore a lot. He just looked at me and he just said, just think with your skills, what could you do to all of the companies in Britain?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, actually, what could I do to all the companies in the world?
Whoa.
And that was when the idea of mental theft dropped into my head.
Yeah.
Now, it started out as I could deliver keynote talks and do magic and mind reading and prove to people that their security needs to be looked at.
Mm.
Because you get some IT geeks that are brilliant at cybersecurity, but then you get lay people who don't want to bother about, you know, putting the latest update onto their Windows because it's boring and it'll take time.
Yeah.
But it's because they don't understand how people like me will use that against them.
Mm.
And kind of the in-between, I make people realize they really need this help, and I make it easy for the IT geeks because they don't have to talk normal human being speak, because the normal people don't get IT geeks. So I'm kind of the between. And I promote them and I prove how normal people need this stuff. But I do so while having fun and scaring the bejesus out of people. I don't know if you heard about this thing. Start of last year, we had to lock down for some weird reason.
Yeah, I did hear something about that. I'm not sure what it was all about,
I'm sure it was only me that got locked in. They said, let's lock this house. It'll be safer for everyone. But when we got locked down, really, so I had two businesses. I had the magician work, which is entertaining crowds of people, and I had keynote speaker, which is really speaking to crowds of people. So on a day,
gone completely, week, gone.
Just both businesses just wiped out. I'll be blatant with you. I think I went into depression for a few weeks. I don't really know because I wasn't allowed out to go and see doctors. But the nuts thing is, I mean, my wife was brilliant about it, and my business partner was amazing. He just kind of backed off and went, it's all right, do what you need to, just relax, just chill, we'll keep some things ticking over, it's fine. And then about 6 weeks into me not being like me, all of a sudden I started doing stuff again. I started the garden, I started building tables, I started making things. And Jesse, my business partner, went, right, you ready? And I was like, what are you on about, mate? And he said, people still need your help with mental theft. We've just got to find a different way to deliver.
Yeah.
And I was like, but dude, I'm close to going bankrupt. I've got no work coming in and no way to earn money. And I've given loads of deposits back because I don't think this is going to be over in a month. So everything's wiped out. And he went, look, we've been talking about writing the book of mental theft for the last year.
Mm-hmm.
He said, the reason we haven't done it is because you haven't had time. You've been running around the country doing all these talks. He said, you've got time.
Yeah.
Write the book. And I said, yeah, but launching it, money, I need to. And he said, no. We'll worry about that excuse later. Right now, write the book.
Mm-hmm.
So we did. And we started writing it, and it's, I mean, I don't want to teach your guys to suck eggs. I know why they're here and listening to your podcast. It's for someone like me sitting at a desk and writing is not easy.
Even for someone like me who writes for a profession, it's not easy. And it takes longer than you think it's going to take. Yeah.
Isn't it amazing how when you sit down to write, all of a sudden doing that washing up is way more important.
Your house can end up spotless, can't it? Your house can end up absolutely spotless. The filing cabinet that you've been meaning to declutter for like 10 years, all of a sudden, it gets done.
That shelf that I haven't put up since we bought the house, I've got to put that up and make sure it's straight. Okay, it's all of this stuff. It's just weird. So our writing style, I've got friends who are authors. I've got friends that help people write books as well, but I couldn't afford to employ any of them. Okay, so we made a skeleton, and that was one document. Then Paul literally just threw up all of his stories into Word. We started doing that, and then Jesse would look at those stories and go, oh, this story really fits nicely for how to secure your house, or this story fits really nicely to the medium business owner, and he started putting them into the right places in the skeleton. And then he did something once where he came back to me with a note on one of the stories. And he said, the story's brilliant and it conveys the message you want, but we really need to get this into people's heads as well. And I said, well, you say it then. And he's like, what do you mean? I said, look, you've just told me I've written the story perfectly and it comes across like it's me. okay? Mm. If I then change that and go really technical, everyone will go, that's not Paul.
Yeah.
I said, why don't you write it? And whenever we need somebody who's more technical and more of an analyst and thinks that way, we'll put in a speech bubble and we'll title it Jesse Says.
Yeah.
And what we've done throughout the book, there's a few speech bubbles that come in and just say, actually, one that he laughs about still is my mobile phone. I never have the most brand new phone because I don't care.
Yeah. Okay?
But there's a bit where I'm warning people about security on types of phones and PIN numbers and how easily I can crack them and stuff like that. And then Jesse comes in saying, by the way, if you've got this phone, or this phone, you don't need to worry about this chapter because that doesn't matter anymore on the security of those.
Yeah, which you wouldn't be able to say because you don't know the phones. So you don't use them. So why would that be relevant to you? What a lovely way to do it. What a great way to kind of collaborate.
It sounds like you two talking. And it's like, well, there it is. So if you look at the book, on the front cover now, down the bottom, it does say by Paul Newton with Jesse Lawrence because helped so massively. But yeah, that's kind of how we did it. Very loads of late nights with a shared Word document that we're peering in backwards and forwards to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got to the point where it was close and you know, we could see this was a book and Jesse started learning how to go and change it into exactly the way that printers want it. And that was when we got to panicking about the money side.
Right, yeah.
Because no big publisher was interested in a magician writing about security.
I think they should be, to be honest, from what I know about what you do. But, yeah.
Do you know what, Alison? Funny thing is, they are now.
That's really interesting. Yeah.
So we went self-publishing route, okay? Yeah. Like I said, I've got friends that are authors and one friend that literally deals with self-publishers, and figuring out the budgets with friends like that was easier, okay? Mm-hmm. So a lot of people helped me to get the information together, and we worked out that we could scrape through and make a something if we raised about £2,000.
Okay.
Now, I'll be honest with you, £2,000 when you're working in the corporate world is nothing. When you're looking down the barrel of you can't really even afford your mortgage, it's a mountain.
It's okay? A lot of money, yeah. Yeah, no, I get that entirely, yes, yeah.
And this is it. And I just got to the point then where I kind of admitted I have to sign on. All of my money was gone. I've got to sign on and get something just to cover the mortgage, if that.
Yeah.
So I had Jesse and two other people tell me to do a crowdfund. And again, I said, I don't want to do that. To me, that feels like I'm begging for money, or it feels like I've got my hands out saying, I can't do this, I need you to do it. And do you know what? A couple of things happened. Jesse made me look at it a bit differently. He said, look, we're not begging. What we're going to do is we're going to think of it as pre-selling. So mm-hmm. we've got a load of things that people interested in security would need. And we put them up as products, and we said, look, if you put in £10, you get an RFID protection card because people need them. If you put up £25, you'd get the book and you'd get an RFID card. And we started putting all these things together and worked out that with the profits from X, we mm-hmm. could make the book and supply these products. So what was it? £2,000 we'd scrape through. £4,000 I could make a product that I'm proud of. Mm-hmm. And is then available to buy, and it then goes out on print on demand once we've sold the first and initial batch. And that's where the book is now. So anytime anyone wants to buy one, it's literally printed for that person by Amazon and by Ingram Spark and goes out to bookshop. So we did this crowdfunder. One of my friends, I did say to you, I didn't want to do the crowdfunder. Seriously, I was kicking and screaming, saying this is wrong, this won't work, this is stupid. Then I got a phone call from one of the crowdfunding websites, and they said, we've been told about your project and we really want it on our site. And I was like, who's told you? And they said, well, you know, the lady in question has said that she doesn't want to admit that she's told us, but she's given us your phone number. And we love what you're trying to do. We think this would really work. If you go with us to do this, we're going to do it for zero fees.
Wow. Gosh.
Yeah. No, what do you mean zero fees? They said, well, normally we would take between 5% and 10% of everything raised as our fee and keeps our company running. And I went, yeah. And they said, we won't do that. And I was like, okay.
What's the catch?
I know, right? I deal with scammers. I'm thinking, what's the catch?
Yeah.
Then he said, just to make it more interesting, even the credit card processing fees, we're going to pay for them. I'm like, there really is no fees. And he said, yeah. And he goes, anything you raise goes straight into your pocket within X days of it closing. Oh, okay. And we're going to put you in touch with grants that we think would work with this as well. So you might get an extra few pounds on top. And I'm like, oh, okay. And he goes, because we know all of the grants that work with this. It got to the point, Alison, where if I'd said no to this, I would have been the stupidest businessman in the whole world.
Yeah.
I went, right, we'll do it.
Yeah.
We're going to. I'm going to tell people that I don't want to do it, but it's the only way forward. And this works now. This is, if you could have looked at this, it was literally a perfect line of everything lining up and saying that you need to go this way.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes it just happens, doesn't it? Sometimes things just fall into place and you think, I am an idiot if I don't do this now, because everything is lined up ready to go.
And I still happily tell people I didn't want to do this. I thought this was the wrong way to go. Yeah. And I'm so happy to be wrong every so often. I don't mind being wrong.
Yeah.
But the funny thing was, like I said to you, we had our first target of £2,000. We had a main target of £4,000. We ended up raising £6,885.
Wow, impressive.
In the book. And actually, I'm just about to have a cup of tea. We did this video, and if you look at my mug, because me and Alison are talking on a video conferencey thing.
Yeah. Mental theft mug. I like it. Yeah.
I take the mick out of these mugs because there was a load of products, including the book, and the value was £35 on the crowdfunder. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You put in an extra £15, you got a mug.
Whoa.
You got a mental theft mug for £15, Alison.
Yeah.
Even in the video announcing them, I said, no one is going to go for this because you can buy mugs from Poundland.
You've got to be a mug to be paying £15 for a mug. Yeah.
I took something rotten out of the mugs. We ended up having to order about 20 of them.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It just shows, doesn't it? You don't know what value people put in things. Yeah. It's not just a mug. It's a mental theft mug. And that kind of makes this it special.
On the back, it says, proud supporters of mental theft, we help you stay safe from scammers. Now, the fact is, without those people, that book wouldn't have launched.
Yeah.
And that's why they did it. A load of people rallied together, boosted me, boosted my company, and made the book possible. And those, seriously, mate, those donations ranged from, I think the lowest one was £2.
Mm-hmm.
And the person sent me a message saying, mate, if we were sat together, I'd be buying you a coffee. So here's the money for the coffee. Up to one company called Aeris, they're in security. They sent me a message saying, we're watching what you're doing and we've got your back. We love this. They put in £1,500.
Wow. Yeah.
And everyone in between, the people who put in 50 quid to get a cup. What the... And don't get me wrong, they got my book as well and they got the RFID cards, but they chose to upgrade to get an extra cup.
Yeah. Because they believed in what you were doing. Because they believed in what you were doing. They could afford an extra 15 quid. They get a cool mug out of it as well. So why not? You know? So why not?
This is it.
Why not help you out? Yeah.
If you're listening, it holds tea really well.
Does it? Yeah.
I love tea. I really do.
Oh gosh, yeah, I am a huge tea drinker, and proper tea is not so easy to find out here in Portugal. So I buy it by the thousand bag, you know. I literally.
So proud of you. If you really need it, mate, just ping me your address. I'll ship you a load. We'll be all right.
Thank you. Yeah, I love my tea. Absolutely love it. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so
I might ask someone if I can brand some as mental theft and send it over to you, just so you know.
That would be awesome. Yeah. And a mug. Absolutely. And a mug as well. So, So back to the book. So you ran the crowdfunder. You got the money. You got three times what you needed.
Three times what we needed to scrape through, and we ended up creating this thing that. Seriously, Alison, on a daily basis, I get emails of somebody called me up and tried the scam that you described on page 46. And I can't thank you enough because you've saved me probably thousands of pounds.
Wow. Yeah. There are so many scammers around at the moment, aren't there? I mean, I think I just took a call on my mobile this morning. Somebody in a very suspicious voice said, I'm just calling from Royal Mail Collections. Now, I live in Portugal. I have got a UK phone number. So anything that comes through like that, I'm straight away like, scam, cut off, block. You know, because I know Royal Mail are not going to be phoning me here because I don't use their services. But some of them are so convincing, aren't they? Some of them are.
It happened to me this morning. I got a phone call on my mobile. It came up with a weird number and it said Italy at the top. And I was like, here we go, scammer. And answered it. And it was a pre-recorded voice telling me that the National Crime Agency were after me because my national insurance number had been linked to crime. And I'm like, really? Really? You're going to cancel my NI number, which, by the way, you can't cancel. Anyone that's listening to this, your NI number is yours. It stays with you for life if you're in Great Britain. It's a load of tosh. I nearly said something much worse. I always try never to swear on these things because if my daughter ever heard it, she'd kick my backside.
Yeah. My mum listens to these as well, so...
So you understand. I'm 44 and I could not handle my dad hearing me swearing. just wrong. These scams are out there and they're still going. And do you know what? Before we started recording, I was joking with you that you've written three books and because of that, I think nuts. Anyone that writes one and then decides to do another one, you're a special kind of nuts. You really are, okay? I was laughing and joking about that. And I've now got people asking me when Mental Theft 2 is coming out.
There you go. It doesn't stop at one. It never stops at one.
Yeah. And the scams, they're going to keep changing. They're going to keep advancing. There's already enough material.
I bet, So I'm really intrigued to know, what happened when the book came out? Where did it take you? How has it changed? It sounds like you were in a not very good place, really. The two strands of the business had crashed and burned because of the pandemic and lockdown, and you wrote this book and you had to crowdfund to get it out there.
Yeah.
So what happened after that? Where did it go?
I had some good friends trying to warn me about the PR around a book. Okay. And they said to me that this is going to change a lot of things. We think this is going to go nuts. And they did honestly try to warn me. But in my head, it's still a security book written by a magician. This is silly. This is a silly... The keynotes, they work because I can entertain people. But a book about it, this is silly. This is not. And again, Paul was very wrong. This did go nuts. I'm still riding a wave of this book doing well. From it... I gained a lot of people who then started booking me to do online keynote talks.
Right.
Which I could earn money again. There was obviously an income from the book as well, which I hadn't really thought of because I didn't believe it would sell that much.
Yeah.
But there is an income from the book. There's now people who are going, wow, that's a great way to look at security. Can we book you for this talk and this talk and this talk? Now, I'll be honest with you. If you're talking about the Women's Institute or something, and I'm going to help a bunch of little old ladies worry about their security, I'm not going to earn much from that, and I'm not going to charge them much because they just need help. Whereas if you're talking about a massive bank, and I've now spoken for, what was it called? It was something like the American Association of Banking, where I did talk for 150 people that lead banks in America. Funnily enough, you earn a paycheck for that one. Where they're coming to you because you're now the expert on this. I'm literally,
yes. I'm nodding because this is the thing that I say to people. Yeah, I wrote a book about ADHD because I had a kid with ADHD. I'd always thought, I wish there was a book written by someone like me. And when he was 15 and things were easier, I was like, I wish there was. And when he was 15, life was a bit easier and I wanted to write a book because I'd always wanted to write a book. And I thought, right, I'll do it. I'll write about him. And for me, it was always my little book about raising my son. You know, that was it. And it ended up with me being started with local radio. I've been on Sky News. I've been on a documentary with an Olympic gymnast. I've spoken in front of 300 educational professionals. You know, I've developed a whole business off the back of it. I still now have emails from people saying, your book has really helped me. It's shown me I'm not alone. And it's like, where the heck did all this come from? Because this is just my little book, you know? But suddenly writing that book means I'm the expert, you know? I am the expert in ADHD, and that makes such a difference. And people don't realise how powerful having a book is in making you that expert. Yeah, you are the expert in insecurity and scams and all that kind of thing, just because you wrote a book that you didn't think was going to do anything. It's crazy. No, yeah.
I mean, you can see this.
Sorry, I got a bit passionate there, didn't I? This is
and that picture behind me was a present from Jesse because he took that photo for the front cover. So we could save money on designing the front cover, okay? Because that's where I was, okay? And like you said, I have companies contact me now, and they go, it varies from, we need help with our security. And I go, brilliant, okay, let's have a chat. Let's see if you actually need me, or do you need an IT geek, or do you need a locksmith, or do you need this? And I put them with the right people. I don't earn money from it, but they're more secure. I then have companies who go, can you come in and work with our people? Just get them to understand that security matters. Yes, of course I can. And if I'm charging, I don't know, 500 quid, £1,000, whatever it is for going in and talking to them, they're going to save a lot more than that.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's from this book that I wrote when I needed to get that information out of my head. And this is something big for me. When we wrote the book, we didn't write it thinking this is going to get us loads more work. We wrote it thinking there's people out there who can't afford a consultant that want to charge £2,000 a day. Hmm. Okay. They can buy this book for under £15 and they get a shed load of help.
Yeah.
Whether that's the little old lady who needs to learn not to write passwords down in a book and leave it in her top drawer next to a computer, all the way up to the big businessman who I'm going to warn them about how other businesses will really try and steal your information.
Mm.
Okay, that's the downside. Jesse's background's in marketing. And one of the things that he said was that he loved me for writing this book, but he also hated me for writing this book because this book has not got a target market.
You've written it for everybody rather than I mean, it's very much like with marketing, isn't it? You have your reader, you have them in mind, who's going to read this book, and you focus your book on them, and it's not a little old lady and a CEO of a company.
Very different people that care about very different things, but the book helps both of them.
And it's worked in your case, though, by the sounds of it.
And do you know what? Maybe that's the next idea, is while people are already asking when Mental Theft 2 is happening, maybe one of those things is we do Mental Theft for Business.
Yeah, there's a lot of niches, I guess, aren't there? Yeah.
But at the moment, mate, I've got more than enough work going on with what's happened with the book, what's happening with talks all over the place. And what's happening with the club as well, because I'm making a membership area, so any new scams that come in, all of my members know about it as soon as I do.
Okay, cool. Wow.
Even that wouldn't have happened if the book hadn't been out.
Yeah.
So, if you're sat there listening to this right now and going, I don't know if I can, do me a favour and just do it, okay? Just write it out and do it. Get yourself to a point when you've got too much information on the paper, and then hand it to someone you trust. Now, don't give it to the person who's just going to tell you you're brilliant and it's lovely and it's fluffy and it's amazing and it's lovely, isn't it so nice, and let's have a cup of tea and nice cream. Okay? Give it to the person who will critique it.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what my friends are great at doing. I've got one of my buddies, Sam Pierce. She's brilliant at that. My wife is brilliant at that. Jessie is brilliant at that. Jessie's wife is brilliant at that. And when we handed this to those four, we got the, this is amazing. This is brilliant. But we also got the, this bit doesn't feel complete. This bit here, you've started to sound like an IT geek and that's not you. Why did you do that on this subject?
Yeah.
And that's when you start going, actually, this could work because they're taking this seriously. Get the right people about around you.
Yeah.
Funny enough, I have a feeling Alison will help you with that. but, you know, get those people who know what they're doing. Get them to properly critique what you're doing and listen.
I mean, the official term is beta readers, isn't it?
Yes.
I don't think people realise how important they are. Yeah, and like you said, you don't want to give it to your best friend or your mum if you know that they're just going to say, yeah, it's really good, it's great. You want to give it to someone who's going to rip it apart. You want to be saying to people, what's wrong with it? What can be better about it? Because the more feedback you get, the better you can make the book, the more useful you can make the book. And that's the only way that you're going to do it, by having other people read it, because you're never going to see what's wrong with it. You're not going to see what bits don't make sense because you know what you're writing about. But somebody without your knowledge is going to be going, what? I've got no idea what he's talking about.
And also, when you know what you're writing about far too well, you don't actually read it.
Yeah.
You don't. You just don't. You will scan read it and you'll fill in the bits that you may have missed on the paper in your head. And go, yes. And there was one that just made me laugh. I had checked it loads of times. Jessie had checked it loads of times. And then we handed it to our wives because they were our first beta readers.
Yeah.
We handed it to our wives and both of our wives went, why haven't you finished this story? We're like, what? Up to five, page whatever it was. You've just stopped. You haven't finished the story. And me and Jesse are both like, hold on, no, they're wrong. They're right. They're right.
Yeah.
And right. Now have we both missed that?
So easy to do.
And then all of our crowdfunder followers, everyone that had gone to the point of purchasing the book, we also treated them as beta readers.
Okay. Yeah.
You think about it for a second. So all of them knew they were going to get the first copies of the book. Now, we'd had me proofread it, Jesse proofread it, both of our wives proofread it, Sam proofread it. We'd had really small, trusted circle proofread the original document, okay? Mm-hmm. Then you have to redesign it to make it in the way printers want it. Mm-hmm. And if you do self-publishing, depending on which company you use, the one we use said you could upload once, and if you need to edit it, you can re-upload it.
Yeah.
And I think it cost us, we worked out it was worth it. It was like another £30 or something.
I was going to say, I think with Amazon KDP Print, you can upload it as many times as you want, whenever you want, without paying. But if you use Ingram Spark, you do have to pay, don't you? You pay to upload it, and then you have to pay if you change it. So, yeah, you need to be making sure it's right, kind of thing.
What was it? It was something like if you change the ISBN number, it was a lot more money.
Yeah.
But if you were just changing some of the content but keeping everything else the same, it was about 25 or 30 quid. I can't really remember.
Yeah, it sounds about right. I think it's £25 every time you change the manuscript.
So we had all of our first crowdfunders got the original book, and the funniest thing, Alison, was this book went out. It was the first run. It was being held back from being on sale. It wasn't allowed out on Amazon. It wasn't allowed out with Ingram Spark. Only our beta readers, only the people that did the crowdfunder, had a copy. And it was amazing because literally within, so we posted them on one day. We kind of expected them to take 2 days to land.
Yeah.
About 12 of the books were sold to people that weren't far from where I live. So I hand delivered some and made a bit of social media about it, taking photos of me hand delivering books and silly things like that. By day two, after we started posting, we started having feedback come in from those people.
God, they haven't just opened it and chucked it to one side then. They've actually opened it and read it. Wow.
And still, do you know what? Out of, it was something like 85 books went out in that first week of just crowdfunders. And by day two, we had some people going, why did you write that paragraph twice?
We went,
sorry, what? I think it was page 53. I'm now going to have to check because I've obviously got one of the original copies. But it was something like page 53. And it almost became a joke between my team of, you know, when people have read it, because they'll mention page 53.
Right, yeah.
So to all of those crowd funders who haven't checked, there's a paragraph somewhere doubled up, and it must have just been a copy and paste mistake that me or Jesse made somewhere.
Yeah.
And because we read it so many times, our brains skipped that paragraph.
Just blind to it, yeah.
But now the ones that are for sale around the world, that paragraph sorted. It's gone, and it's been changed.
So they've got the exclusive copies. They've got the rare copies.
Rare copies. There is like 100 under 100 copies of that book, with that mistake in it. Me and Jess, we still find it funny. It just still amuses us that the amount of times we checked through that thing,
and still miss it. I mean,
an apostrophe being in the wrong place, and I'm like, oh, is that all you did? Don't worry.
we had a whole paragraph in there twice. Obviously, I work as a proofreader, so I proofread stuff, and I think even the best proofreaders can't actually pick up everything. I mean, I read everything I proofread twice, and I can still miss things. Not often. I do my utmost not to, but I'm human, you know, and humans are not perfect. So
I said straight away I would never be a proofreader, because you just get into a flow of enjoying reading. I go into my own world when I read a book.
Yeah. So, the way I do it is I read out loud, because when I read out loud, and I'm saying every word, then I have to look at it and I have to say it, and I can tell when there are things missing. But yeah, if I stop, I can find that I kind of get, I've just read a paragraph and I'll have to go back and do that again now because I've not actually read it properly.
That paragraph, and you enjoy it, then you stop caring about where the full stop is and where.
I don't know about stopping caring. I'm one of those awful, grammar Nazis, I think we're called, who does notice everything. I'm like, that's what I do. What I do
so well with my wife, because that's what she's like. She will spot those from like 20 miles off. And there's me just happily skipping along, going, "This is nice. This is lovely." there you go. Yeah. That's an image for your head. Paul Newton skipping through a field.
It's going to stay with me all day now. Yeah. So obviously the book has had a huge impact on your business and on what happens there. Have you learned anything about yourself as a result of writing it and publishing it?
So considering I've been an entertainer all my life, and that's been my only source of income for the last 14-ish years, I've found out that actually I'm quite a private person. So I go out and the public performance thing is one thing, but because of what I'm doing now, it's much more of the real me walking on stage or walking onto a Zoom platform or being asked questions. It's like today with me and you recording this. Okay, you haven't come here, you haven't asked me to do this because you want to see a magic trick.
No. And although if you wanted to show me, I don't know how well they work on just a podcast, but
probably not. A visual trick for an audio audience, that would be funny. I know that I used to hide behind magic tricks, okay, and do something that would make people laugh and smile and get them intrigued, okay, and that was always my job. Whereas now they're actually asking Paul Newton stuff,
right.
And I'll come on to it. And I honestly believe telling people about the fact that I think I went into depression when we got locked down, that's not something a magician talks about. They go on there and they go, look at the cup and balls. Let's make these disappear and reappear all over the place. But you know what? I think it's important. I really do. There's too many people, I was going to say there's too many men. No, there's too many people that go into these horrible spaces where they think they're worthless because they can't do the thing they've loved doing. But actually, there's probably another way and another way to deliver and another way to help that maybe you haven't seen yet. Yeah. I mean, I'm sitting here now in my little studio, okay? I lovingly call it a studio. Seriously, if I pointed the camera the other way, you would call it unfinished.
Okay? I would call it what? You sound unfinished. Okay.
Not fully built. There's things I need to fix in here a lot.
Yeah.
But if I'm pointing the camera and the microphone this way, I've got nice wall there. I've got some of my magic props set up and ready and a lovely photo that Jesse gave me.
Yeah.
I'm show ready. The rest of it doesn't matter. But yeah, so I have to go out now and be real me. It's weird.
That's been quite a transformation, has it? That's been quite a challenge, has it, to do?
Yeah. The nice thing is that wherever I go, I still wear the trilby hat in the hope that if I take it off, people don't recognise me.
That's your anonymity. When you're shopping in Sainsbury's on a Saturday, you don't have the trilby so that people don't come up to get your autograph.
It works. It really works. Just before lockdown, myself and Jesse, I did a big keynote talk where I had my grey suit on, my black shirt on and the trilby hat on. And I did this 45-minute talk that ended up being an hour and 10 because they were having too much fun. And the organiser just said, if you've got more stories, keep going. So I did. And I walked off stage, walked backstage, took off the suit, put on jeans and a T-shirt. I walked back out on stage to clear some kit up.
Yeah.
And the organiser said, oh, is Paul in the room?
Gosh, so it does work. I suppose when you have something like a hat.
Yeah.
That does kind of take over. When you have some sort of prop that you have or funny glasses that can become what you're known for,
Now I've pointed that out to you blatantly. Look at all of my stuff. All of it is branded with the suit and the hat.
Right, yeah.
LinkedIn, Twitter, all of it. Even my funny little cartoony character is wearing the grey suit.
Yeah.
And that's what people recognise now. Me and Jesse find it quite funny that actually to disappear out of a massive exhibition centre, all I have to do is take the hat and jacket off and I'm gone.
Yeah. That's the power of branding, isn't it? And personal branding. You know, as an author, you can personally brand yourself as well so that people know what you're known for.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's just amazing. Means I can still break into buildings as well and people don't know it's me.
Don't wear your hat. Don't wear your hat when you're burgling. So you've already given me some great tips for other authors, basically about just getting on and doing it. But also in terms of structuring, I loved your idea of having a skeleton structure and then writing everything you know and then picking out the pieces and thinking, well, that goes there, that you know what the structure is so you can fit things in. What other tips have you got for people?
Massive whiteboard.
Okay.
Seriously, my whiteboard. I've got a whiteboard and I'm looking over at the other side of the office now and it's up there. It's honestly about 5 foot by 3 foot and it's
that's
massive.
A big one.
It takes up a big chunk of the wall. But when I wrote the book, it literally in the top left corner it just had mental theft and the little goggle things that make it me look like a burglar. And I sectioned that bit off and then I just wrote so many notes. So many, this is an idea, don't know where it's going yet. This is the idea. And that's where the skeleton was born from. That's when I started picking stories out. And you take a photo of it and you can put it on your computer and keep it there if you want. And then you can wipe it out and then you can go, right, from that idea, where are we going? And you can, I'm big on mind maps.
Yeah.
So you start then exploding from that. And then all of a sudden you go, that's where the skeleton is. That's the subject headings. And in that subject heading, we've got this story coming off. We've got this story coming off. We've got this story coming off. And having people you can bounce off as well.
Mm-hmm.
We had to keep this secret for a while because we'd been doing the keynote talks and they'd gone well. I know there was other people who were going, well, well, we could do that, and we could do this, and we could do that. And we're starting to try and copy. So the book was another step in, stamping our feet and saying, this is us, this is ours, this is what we do. So we had to keep the fact it was being written quite quiet until we'd launched the crowdfunder. And that was when we literally went, right, now's the time to do it. And we now do this so quickly that nobody else can catch up.
Right, yeah.
And it worked. It just worked. I've heard of people now, other magicians who have turned around to companies and said, oh, we can do this. And the company that I've never heard of go, oh, that's Paul Newton's mental theft thing.
You're really getting known now. Yeah, yeah. So the whole mental theft thing is now branded for you and people know about it and word is getting around without you even doing anything about it. That ties into that whole expert thing again, doesn't it?
Really does. And something that you said that, and I you dropped it so quickly and I mentioned it when you said it, is when you said, I wish there was a book.
Mm.
Okay. If you're hearing that in your head, I wish there was a book that could help me with this.
Yeah.
And I've got this, but I wish there was a book that could help me. Then maybe there needs to be a book.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And why not?
Yeah, no, that's right. Or if you hear other people talking about it, you know, I mean, I'm writing a book at the minute about writing books, and that's kind of come about because, you know, I do a lot of, I talk to people about books all the time, and I've heard people say more than once, I wish there was a book that just told me how to do it. Now I can help you do it, but I'm now writing the book that can help you do it as well. And that's from other people saying, I wish there was a book that would take me through this whole process.
Oh,
so, yeah. Here, listen to what other people are saying around what you do or what you know about or what you're interested in.
And, exactly.
Yeah.
This is it. There's a lot of knowledge in my head that can help other people. Mm. What's the easiest way to deliver that to them? That would be in a written format that they can choose to pick up if they want to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's it. I'm not hard selling anything.
No. And in terms of them building a business, that's the first step, isn't it? They read that, they think, oh yeah, this guy knows something. This guy's quite helpful. Yeah. And they either just take that and use it themselves, or the next step is to get in touch with you and say, well, hang on, I've read this book. You obviously know what you're talking about. Can you help us with this? And that's where it takes off.
One that really messes with my own head is I'll have an inquiry come in and it'll be, Paul, you need to deal with this one, go have a chat with, and I'll call them and or we'll have a Zoom chat. And I've had this a few times now when I've gone onto a Zoom chat with somebody that I've never met before, and they literally say, wow, you sound like your book.
That's nice. Yeah. So your book is in your own voice.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
You haven't changed this style. You haven't changed. No, I didn't want to sound like I was an Oxford graduate because I'm not. Okay. I'm a West London boy who now lives somewhere a bit prettier. And and yeah, I'm me. And to be honest with you, when I'm trying to break into a building, I act like me.
Yeah.
And cheeky. And I'm going to try and be funny. And I'm going to try and get past you because you first time you see me and I'm a massive and shaved head, you'll have a bit of fear. Then when I make you laugh, everyone goes, oh, he's a nice bloke. And that's when I walk past security.
I love it. Yeah. But there's a lot to be said for being authentic, isn't there? For being yourself. And that comes to, I've said this to so many people. It seems like sometimes people sit down and they start writing or typing and it becomes really stilted and really dull. And it's like they're writing a school essay or something. No, just write it how you would say it. Write it how you write it like you're writing an email to a friend. Dictate it so it's how you'd say it if you're giving us a talk, but just keep your voice. Don't think you have to write properly, you know.
Yeah. If somebody tells you what there are rules around this, there's not. They're really not. I think the only rules you have to follow is where the ISBN numbers are concerned.
Okay? Yeah,
you know, they might be a legal thing that you might have to actually take notice of, all right? But part of that, if you write your book authentically, it will bring to you the audience that want you.
Yeah.
I don't want to write a book that makes them think I want the Oxford graduate, because then they'll meet me and go, what the hell just happened?
think that, then they're not the person you want to be attracting to you anyway, are they?
Be yourself. Be you. What's it that makes you comfortable and proud of it as well?
No, that's really.
And if you can find yourself a Jesse, because he's brilliant. He helped me so much.
Can you hire him out? I think everyone needs a Jesse in their life, by the sounds of it.
You know what? That poor boy is so busy all the time that I feel quite guilty. To be honest. One day, you'll. Do you know what? In a couple of years' time, I'm hoping, Alison, that me and you'll chat and you'll go, hey, how's it going? And I'll be like, I've got my own office. We've got an actual space. And me and Jesse just turn up whenever we like.
That'd be cool. Yeah, that's the dream, isn't it? So what is next to you? Next for you, you've alluded to their potential for a mental theft too. Do you reckon it will happen? Or
there's been a couple of companies who have approached me now about mental theft too. I'll be honest, I've seen one lot of contract, and they're going to get a no from me because they want too much control over what I'm going
to
do.
This is publishing companies that want to commission a mental theft too. Wow, that's really good, actually. That just proves that, self-publishing can actually lead to a traditional contract if you want one. But, there are...
This is it. It's the if you want one.
Pros and cons, yeah.
Because I've had friends who have self-published and then gone through a publishing company and they didn't enjoy it. I've had friends that did it, loved it. Mm-hmm. And I've listened to both sides of the argument. But the thing for me was there was a clause about how many prints there would be and where they would get sold. And they were going to decide on covers and foreword and things like that. And I was like, no. No. You're already taking away parts of the bit that I loved. Mm. So... if I'm going to start a project and think, well, I'm not going to enjoy that, why would I even consider it? Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you, I now understand the power of self-publishing. The fact that this bloke sat in the south of England can have a book made anywhere in the world.
It's amazing, isn't it? Yeah.
I'm not wasting shed loads of paper by printing out 20,000 copies that never get sold.
Yeah. It's so lovely when you get your, especially like with your Amazon ones, when you see your Amazon royalties drop into your bank every month and there's like Amazon Mexico or Amazon Japan. It's like, wow, this is just so cool. Yeah.
Exactly that. What was the one that threw me? Amazon New Zealand.
Mm.
Because I'm literally sat there going, who on earth is buying this in New Zealand? And the fact is, I may never know, okay? Yeah. They might read it and they might take loads of ideas. They might read it and think it's a load of rubbish and do nothing with it. They might read it and go, wow, the checklists at the back are brilliant and we're using them constantly,
mm-hmm.
okay? They might read it and call me up and go, we want you to keynote talk for this.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, that person over there has got some of my knowledge in their head because they picked a book from, I don't know, while they were sat on their computer. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I just don't know how they decided.
Yeah.
But that's nuts, isn't it? 7 billion people and any one of them could go, we're going to pick that book because we like it. The GIs on the front cover.
It could be as little as that, couldn't it? Yeah. So do you think Mental Theft 2 will see the light of day one way or another? I reckon it will. Prediction.
How can I put this? There were some bits from Mental Theft original that we decided not to put in there. And while we were writing it, we were just like, this story doesn't fit. So we're not. And I kept having trouble with just leaving it in the document. And I can't remember who said it now, whether it was me or whether it was Jesse or whether it was one of our wives. But the suggestion came up of make a new folder, make a new document, call it Mental Theft 2 and just throw that story into there.
Yeah.
And I went, brilliant, because then it's gone. And when this book absolutely falls flat on its face and I prove it's pointless, we'll never look at that folder again. And everyone went, yeah, perfect. And now I keep adding stuff to that folder.
So how many words have you got in there at the moment, do you reckon?
I think we're at about 20,000.
Whoa, Oh, there you go. That's half a half mental theft two written already, at least.
This is a bit half. Mental theft one? I think mental theft one ended up at about 38,000, maybe 39,000.
There you go then. Halfway there.
Yeah, every so often now I open up that folder and I go, oh. And then my brain goes, should I make a skeleton for this?
No! Just do it. What is stopping you? Just do it. Go for it.
At the moment, the thing that's stopping me is very nicely being too busy.
Ah, fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah. And that's all come about because of mental theft, because of the first book.
Really has. So, mate, seriously, Alison, I ended up with an agent in America selling keynote talks.
Wow. Because of the,
gosh. And like I said, talking to that banking association in America, that wouldn't have happened for a British magician at all.
That's so cool. It's so cool. I just looked at the time and realised that we've been talking for the best part of an hour now. So it probably need to wrap it up, really. I could talk to you all day. It's amazing. But, one of the things I'm saying to people is, if you're in business or if you have a specialist subject or you have a passion somewhere, write a book. It will make you an expert, even if you don't think you are. And then the door opens up to so many opportunities and you are just the perfect example of that happening, and it's been an absolute delight to hear your story and to hear how all this has come about because of lockdown that's caused so much devastation, but actually sent you down and then sent you back up again.
it's
incredible.
A very different business to the one that I had even in my head 3 years ago. I didn't expect this at all. How weird is that?
It's weird. It's very weird. Yeah. But, it's been absolutely fantastic speaking to you today. Paul, where can people find you online if they want to find out more about?
Just go to mentaltheft.co.uk. So mentaltheft, all one word, .co.uk. And any social media, if you type in mental theft as the username, you will find me. And the only people with access to answer anything on those is me and is Jesse. So you will always have contact with one of us two.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much for being my guest on the podcast today. It's been really lovely to find out more about you.
Mate, thank you so much for asking me. All this just because we met at a networking event online.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Small world. Cheers. Thank you to Paul for being my guest on the show today. His book, Mental Theft, is available from Amazon. His website is www.mentaltheft.co.uk. And you can also find Paul all over social media as Mental Theft. All the links are in the show notes. If Paul's story has inspired you to write a book that shares your knowledge and experience, then I would love to help you. Visit my website, www.theprooffairy.com, where you can download a free workbook and book a Zoom call with me. You'll also find all the episodes of this podcast there, and if you're already a published author, you can find out how you can be a guest on the show. If you've enjoyed this podcast, then please subscribe, share it, rate it, and tell your friends about it. And there'll also be a special shout out on the show for anyone who leaves a review. This has been a Proof Fairy production, and I'll be back next week with another inspiring interview with another amazing author. Bye for now.